the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. What is the main concern of many parents? You start listing all the parental concerns that come immediately to mind. Peace, security, education. You just go down the list. You know, however, that there are some big concerns out there that may from time to time kind of arise with a particular urgency. The New York Times had a fascinating cover story found in the business section. That's right, the business section of this past Saturday's edition. Here's the headline: Teaching Work Values to Children of Wealth. Paul Sullivan wrote the article, and it comes down to this. There are many, many wealthy parents whose main concern right now is not so much their investment portfolio, it's not their stocks and bonds, it's not their wealth, it is their children. Paul Sullivan writes about one parent. He says, as a parent who's worked his whole life and has had little bit of success in my career, one of the huge life lessons I learned early on is the value of a dollar, particularly for children of upper middle class and affluent families. There's no perspective on value. When the new Range Rover pulls into the driveway, there's no concept of how many hours of hard work went into owning that vehicle. It goes on to say that the current recession and the tight job market have kind of accentuated the issues of how many children simply don't seem to know how to earn a living and do not understand the value of a dollar. Matthew Brady, head of the Wealth Advisory Office for Barclay Wealth, said, the issue of children is the most important topic that affects our clients. It's the topic that comes up most consistently in every conversation. Now, one of the things that comes up again and again in this article is that many parents are concerned about their children because they don't really have any particular plan for how to support themselves. Now, I think the fascinating thing for our discussion today is this. How should parents, Christian parents in particular, how should we raise our children so that they are ready to launch? And certainly an understanding of economics is a part of that. A work ethic has to be a part of that. How do we do this? What has changed in the world that makes it so much more difficult? This particular article is about the children of the wealthy. And yet, as you begin to read it, you understand this is pretty much true for all middle class kids. It's pretty much true for all middle class families. You don't have to be listed on some wealth registry to have the same concern for your kids. And the problem of failing to launch is something that is, it's not just true for the children of the very rich. It's true for the children of the middle class. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. One of the things we need to talk about as Christian parents is how we can do a better job at this and what we need to do. What's missing from the life experience of so many of our kids that they simply don't understand how you earn a dollar, save a dollar, invest a dollar, spend a dollar, and why it matters. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. At my website today at albertmohler.com, I published a major article, which is a book review article. It's suggested reading for the summer, and it is a list of 10 books. I think you'll find it fascinating. To people who are looking for a particular kind of reading, you know, maybe you're looking for nature reading or romance or something like that. As I say, you need to get some other list. My list is heavy in history. It's heavy in the stuff that that I love to read. It's a lot of good stuff, nonfiction, that I found absolutely compelling. And as I wrote in my article, I find when I recommend books like this that when it comes to fun reading, my fun reading really hasn't changed all that much over the past, say, 50 years. I'm still interested in trains and planes and cowboys and Indians and presidents and battles and wars. And you'll find all of that in this list. It's entitled Summer Reading, Books Fit for the Season. And let me tell you, I also provide this list early in June each year in the hopes I can help some folks who are trying to figure out what to do for Father's Day. And hopefully you've got a reading father or father-type person for whom you're going to be finding some kind of gift. And rather than get them a tie they won't wear, get them a book they will read. And you can go to albertmohler.com and find that list, and I hope you will find it helpful. Very sad news coming out today. I was alerted to this just before noon. Al and Tipper Gore, married for 40 years, have announced their separation. Very, very interesting. an email that was circulated among the couple's associates this morning indicated that the decision was, quote, a mutual and mutually supportive decision that we've made together following the process of long and careful consideration. Kaylee Kreider, who is a spokeswoman for Al Gore, confirmed the statement, declined to comment further. Some associates were willing to make at least some comments. One of them said, quote, their lives had gotten more and more separated, that over time they had carved out separate lives with a former vice president on the road frequently. You know, folks, this is not to throw stones at the Gores. This is rather to grieve, because when any marriage breaks up, the proper response is concern and grief. And I certainly hope there is someone close to the Gores who can intervene. And they have been very public about the fact that they have been church members. My hope is that there's a church who will not only offer them counsel, but also biblical exhortation in terms of their responsibilities to each other. Anytime you see a marriage break up, it is a tragedy. As the novelist Pat Conroy said, every single divorce is the collapse of a small civilization. And the collapse of this civilization is just one more tragedy. Let's hope that something can be done to preserve the marriage. Very interesting report coming out of Enfield, Connecticut. We talked about this case several weeks ago. Here you have a large auditorium that is owned by a church. The church uses it for its worship. It's the largest auditorium that is available, and public schools have been using that auditorium with its religious symbolism covered in order to hold high school commencement ceremonies. A student complained, saying that this was a government establishment of religion, and now a U.S. District Judge has agreed. U.S. District Judge Janet Hall in Bridgeport, Connecticut, ruled Monday, that's yesterday, that holding the graduation at the First Cathedral in Bloomfield would be an unconstitutional government endorsement of religion. Absolutely fascinating. You know, now it means that even being in a religious building is a religious act when it's a fairly nondescript auditorium and would have its religious symbols covered. You may remember that one of the plaintiffs in this case made the remark that the red carpet and the stained glass was just too religious. The stained glass, by the way, according to these reports, has no religious symbolism in it. You know, what you're talking about here is the kind of just absolute allergic response on the part of some secularists. By the way, if the churches, this church in particular, is ruled an unacceptable place for commencement, they have to go to the local civic center, it will increase the cost from a few thousand dollars to about $60,000 and be far more inconvenient for students and their families. Interesting report out. As a former Boy Scout, I'll admit I find this somewhat puzzling. But what is coming next? The Boy Scouts of America is not letting Cub Scouts earn a merit badge for video gaming. Wow. It sounds like a surrender to me, but according to press reports, to get the new badge, it is actually a belt loop. Cub Scouts must demonstrate an understanding of the video game rating system, create a balanced schedule of gaming and schoolwork, and learn how to play a new video game. Judy Pete in the Newark, New Jersey Star-Ledger said it's not exactly heavy listening. Then again, with membership in the Scouts down 25%, according to this report, in the last decade, and the average American boy playing 7 hours of video games a week, this may be a necessary concession to the modern world. However, an editorial in the New London, Connecticut Day said, what a bummer. Fascinating. Big reports out there just about what is going on in terms of our military, of course, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And a day after Memorial Day, I have to tell you, I saw over the weekend one of the most amazing stories. It's one of those stories that makes you proud to be an American and proud that our country is often in a position to help. It's a report by C.J. Chivers, found in the New York Times last Saturday. It's from Khan Nasheen, Afghanistan, where a five-year-old boy, Sadiq, was not a casualty of war. As it is explained here, he was simply unlucky. He opened a sack of grain at his home last Wednesday morning, and a pit viper had been coiled up inside. It lashed up and bit him above the lip. His father, Kashmir, knew his son was sure to die. There's no hospital, no antivenin, nothing to help nearby. So he took him to a local emplacement of U.S. Marines. And eventually, as he got to a second Marine installation, it was approved by military authorities, who cautioned they cannot become the EMS for the nation of Afghanistan, to run a medevac for this five-year-old boy. It is hoped that he's going to make it, but the good news is that by Friday afternoon of last week, he was off the breathing machine, still in intensive care, sitting up, drinking juice and milk, and talking. At one point, he was given almost no chance of survival. Now, a little 5-year-old boy, bitten by a pit viper in Afghanistan, is alive because of the United States Marines. We're going to come back to talk about why it is that so many kids are having such a difficult time launching. Why so many parents say that a key part of this is that their kids just don't know anything about money and seem to have a very low work ethic. Let's talk about it. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The headline, Enough, is interesting, Teaching Work Values to Children of Wealth. And you can pretty much define your children as children of wealth. This is pretty much true for almost all Americans. Our children know what it is to be surrounded with things that just appear, with food that that just appears, with, as this story says, the Land Rover, or for that matter, the Corolla. Or the Saturn or the minivan that just shows up in the driveway. These kids have very little understanding of how many hours of hard work go into owning such a vehicle, go into preparing this food, go into setting up a household, go into paying rent and mortgages and all the rest. Matthew Brady, head of the Wealth Advisory Office of the Americas, or Barclays Wealth, says this is the issue that comes up most consistently in every conversation with major investors. Parents of various means are facing the prospect of adult children who have to move into their own homes because they cannot find a job. Parents mean to help. That's another thing made clear in this story. Parents mean to help their adult children, but often when it comes to college-age children and teenagers, well, they're just in a position in which they're not getting the right lessons. I think this is a struggle for all of us. I'm just going to be honest. I think this is a big parenting challenge. And the reason why I thought we ought to talk about it today is because this particular article in the New York Times was kind of an alarm bell to me, because it seems to me that I don't hear Christians talking about this enough. And let me tell you, I look at this from several different angles. The angle of cultural commentary, yeah, we certainly see that. We have the demographic and the social statistics before us. We understand the failure to launch. I look at this as a pastor, and I understand what a challenge this is for many families. I look at this as a parent. And I also look at this from a different perspective. And that is, as a Christian looking at this, thinking, what have we done to ourselves and to our families and to our children, to our expectations, that our children seem to be having such a difficult time moving into adulthood? What is it that has gone wrong, and what do we need to do to fix it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do we need to do to help our children develop a work ethic? What's missing? I'll tell you a part of what's missing. Their life experience is so different than the life experience of their parents. When I was a kid, most of the cars that we had in our family were used cars. If it was a new car, like no one ever drove it before, that was a huge deal. I mean, that was like one of those moments you'll never forget, sitting in the car with that new car smell. That's huge. Going out to eat when I was a child, that was a very, very rare thing. Very rare. The consumer goods, the entertainment and all the rest, they happened from time to time, but they were rare. Family vacations were like camping trips. It's a very different thing now. And it has to do with rising expectations, rising wealth. It has to do with changes in our society. It has to do with a different way that we treat children and adolescents, teenagers now, than we have in the past. Whereas in the past, there had been a pretty steady move quickly into the workforce. I was 14 the day I got my work permit. And I mean, I had just turned 14. It was my birthday. I got a work permit so I could work in my dad's store. And that was not all that unusual in my boyhood. And my Saturdays were spent working. And I learned very quickly what a paycheck looked like. I learned very quickly what it meant for somebody to take stuff out of that paycheck called taxes and Social Security and all the rest. I learned what a bank account looked like. I learned how hard it was to save. I learned very quickly, you spend a dollar once and it's spent. And that those are hard lessons to learn early on, but I think they're much harder to learn later. I think that's the big lesson from this. And now you've got parents who have adult children who are saying these kids don't know anything about how to hold a job. They have unrealistic expectations. They don't understand that you don't start out with all of this. They assume that that when they get married and kind of enter into adulthood, that all these things should simply happen, and they're not going to happen. And as a matter of fact, this generation is going to face some unprecedented challenges in terms of economics, in terms of their own economic self-sufficiency, in terms of their own careers, because of the vast changes that are going on in the workplace and in the economy. Young men in particular are going to face some big, big challenges, because there has always been a fallback position for young men, which has been if you don't go to college and you don't become a professional and you don't go this route, you don't go that route, you can still earn a pretty good living as a plumber. Or as a construction worker, or you name it, in terms of factories and manufacturing. But those jobs have been the most hard hit in this recession, and many of them are not coming back. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There are really two questions here. Number one, how did this happen? But number two, what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it? What should we do about it? What should parents right now be thinking through, Christian parents in particular, about what we expect for our children and what we expect of our children and how we help move them into adulthood. When I saw this article by Paul Sullivan in the New York Times, I thought, wow, this one hits really close to home, because it's not one of those things that affects some parents. You know, it's not about children who have this syndrome or that syndrome or children in this situation or that situation. This is just about every single family with every single kid. Every single teenager or young adult college student, we're pretty much all here. And, I think there are a lot of things we do that mislead our kids. I mean, these kids aren't particularly more lazy than any previous generation. It's not like original sin all of a sudden kicks in this generation. This generation of children and young adults lacks some of the life experiences that would have taught some of the lessons necessary to be fully functioning in terms of the adult world. And it's coming off. Well, several of the reports coming out now say that this generation has a significant sense of entitlement, a significant expectation of entitlement. And when it turns out that the entry-level position pays an entry-level salary, they're shocked. When it turns out that the landlord actually expects to be paid on a monthly basis, they're shocked. When it turns out that their budget will not include, cannot include what vastly exceeds their income, then they're shocked. One of the interesting studies I was looking at said that college students asked to put together a budget tended to overspend, now get this, by 70%. Not talking about 7%, 70%. In other words, when they said, this is how much I think I'm going to need to spend on a monthly basis, and then over here, here's how much I think I can earn, there was a 70% differential. Folks, math won't bend. You may try to be a moral relativist, but, you know, a math relativist is going to be the first to prove to you that relativism doesn't work. 70% differential is a recipe for disaster. Frankly, a 7% differential is a recipe for disaster. What we're looking at here is the fact that many of these families, and especially when it comes to many of the kids, they simply haven't had some of those experiences. And I think we as parents need to understand we're partly responsible for that. We live lifestyles that make it very difficult for our kids to have some of those experiences. And let's be honest, I think many of us as parents actually have taken pride in the fact that we were able to do for our children more than our parents may have been able to do for us. And there are good things in that. There are experiences that you wouldn't trade because of that. But there is a cost. And you know, right now, this is a chicken coming home to roost. How are we going to get our kids rightly, healthfully, and responsibly launched? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Right back with the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. No, the Scripture is pretty clear on this. The Scripture valorizes work, makes very clear that God made us in His image and able to work, responsible to work. God gave us the pride of what we see we can do with our hands. The Lord makes very clear in His Word that that we have a right to have income from the work of our hands. We have the right to an expectation, the responsibility to use this capability in such a way that we derive an income. The Bible's very clear about the fact that that sloth is indeed not only not to be rewarded, it is a sin. The Bible honors investment, thrift, savings, the kinds of things that make for good financial management by no coincidence. And yet it's difficult, I think, increasingly difficult for many children and young adults to learn these lessons. And that's why we're having this conversation. I think it's very instructive that at the New York Times, on the front page of the business section, the financial pages, there is panic among parents. There's reflected in this article. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to New Haven, Connecticut, where Gloria's on the line. What do you think, Gloria?
Hi. I just wanted to say that you have to be an example in all economic groups, poor, middle class, and rich, because I was a single parent, and I raised my son by myself. You know, and he learned that I had to have a job in order to pay rent and bills. So when I was in a bad car accident, I was on short-term disability, and my son, he was only 9 years old, and he came in the room screaming, saying, "Mom, who's going to pay the rent and the bill?"
Wow.
And I said, "Well, Eric, don't worry. You know, we can pay the rent and the bill." So my mother, she had to show my son that she paid the rent, the cable, the lights, and the phone, just so he could be satisfied. And she said, "Gloria, after I showed him that, he was fine." So you have to be an example to your children. You know, and I didn't sit down and have talks with Eric about, "Oh, you got to put money aside, this, that, and the other." He learned by my example. I used to take him to work with me on the weekends. I worked two jobs. I cleaned offices. I brought him with me. And if I worked overtime, I had to bring him with me to the office. I worked for Aetna Life and Casualty, and he would be in the office watching me work. So he knew that you have to have a job in order to survive.
Yeah.
Now he's an adult. He's 28 years old. He's getting married next year, and he's been out on his own for 6 years, and he's been able to maintain himself and never asked me for a dime. Now, I know that's God, and I wasn't perfect, okay, but God helped me take care of him, and he learned responsibility. So it's that's what you have to be, an example to your children. And, you know, show them how to do it, even if you don't talk about it. Well, that's what worked with my son.
Oh, Gloria.
And I just want to let you know, we came from a poor, we were poor.
You know,
we were poor.
Well, and I know when you say that, you mean in matters of money, Gloria. And I just want to tell you, I honor you for being rich in the things of the Spirit. And as a parent, boy, you really invested in Eric. And he's the young man he is, as you say, by the grace of God, but largely because of your parenting. I have to tell you, though, you said something there, Gloria, that really caught my attention. You talked about when you were put on disability and that boy was nine. And at 9 years old, he had the panic of saying, "How in the world are we going to pay the rent? How are we going to survive?" You know, I think if I could have an opportunity someday to talk to Eric, my guess is that Eric would say, a lot of his financial growing up happened in a moment of panic when he was nine. And I think, Gloria, that a lot of kids don't have that experience. They've never had that experience. They've never had that concern. They're not worried about what might happen because they've never had to worry. Now, the last thing we should want is for our children to have to worry. I mean, we do not pray for calamity. But we are living in a time of artificial plenty. We're living in a time of artificial comfort and artificial security. Gloria, thank you so much for your call. Let me tell you, just the energy and the firmness and determination in your voice tells me that Eric learned a lot from you, and I'm very, very thankful. And you're right, parents must be an example. And, you know, I think, as I'm being self-critical here as a parent, I think a lot of times I fail and to make very clear the financial dimensions of the decisions we sometimes make. Of even when you're paying the tab in a restaurant, you know, how all this adds up. And, you know, what this money means, it could have been used elsewhere. How is our stewardship demonstrated in doing this rather than doing that? You know, our kids, most of them, never see the gas bill. They never see the electric bill. They never see the insurance bill. They don't see all these bills. They think the cable television or the satellite just happens. It's our job to make clear that it doesn't just happen. The phone number is 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the failure to launch, not just in terms of failing to move out of the home in adulthood, but failing to be responsibly, economically, and vocationally launched. This is a big challenge for parents, wealthy parents, according to the cover story of this New York Times article. But it's for Christian parents, I think, that there's a particular concern, because we know that the responsibilities of adulthood are not just about secular success and thriving. They're about the spiritual health of the individual as well. There's a responsibility to grow up, to assume adulthood, adult responsibilities, and that means a certain economic sophistication, a certain work ethic, a certain understanding of money. Well, let me make a certain number of suggestions here, and I'm doing so as a parent, kind of in the same situation as the rest of you. I think one of the things we need to do is to make clear that when it comes to a job, you're actually going to have to provide something someone considers worth parting money for. In other words, the whole idea of a job is that you've got something to bring to the equation someone else likes more than money, because he's going to give you the money to do this. And that's just the essence of a job. A job is not there by some act of Congress or just some kind of event of nature. A job is there because something needs to be done, and the man who's offering the job or the woman who's offering the job does so because what you bring is more important than money. They're willing to give you money, a certain amount of money. That's how you find out how much your contribution is worth, because you find out how much they're willing to pay for it. And that's when you come to the hard realization that they're only willing to part with their money if you actually bring the contribution, if you actually do the job, if you actually contribute something. And that's why when I talk to young people, and I talk to a lot of them, and especially in this time of economic insecurity, I point out to them that indispensable people don't lose their jobs. Dispensable people lose their jobs. Now, obviously, there are some exceptions to that. Entire companies sometimes close. But the reality is, if you make yourself indispensable, if you make such a contribution that the owner of that business, the manager of that business, can't imagine doing business without you, you've got a lot of job security. Now, there's no such thing as absolute job security, but you've got a lot of job security. And that means that it is our business to do whatever it takes to make ourselves indispensable. You know, when it comes to money, I think here's another big life lesson. I am really convicted of my failure as a parent to draw a lot of economic conclusions out before my own children. And I realized that I had the luxury of not thinking it was necessary. But I start looking at this, and I listen to what's going on in the larger world, and I watch what's happening with so many young adults, and I realize, you know, they're graduating from college and they don't have any idea how it all adds up. Again, if the average college student graduating in this one experiment indicated that she or he was going to spend 70% more than they actually expected to earn, you got a huge problem. I was talking to a mom the other day who told me that she had a son who just graduated from college, and the son came home and said he had found an apartment. And the apartment was the apartment of his dreams. He was going to be moving in with a friend into an apartment, and these two young guys were just really excited about this apartment that they found. And the mom and the dad asked the young man, "All right, how much is the rent?" And he told them. And they said, "Well, isn't that about how much you earn?" And he said, "Yeah, this covers it." And the dad just sat down and said, "You're going to get real skinny, because you've got no money for food. You've got no money for, you know, for anything. You're just paying rent. And by the way, the reason that the young man liked this apartment is because it had, quote, free cable, and it had free this and free that. And the dad said, son, it's not free. You're paying for it. It's in that rent. And again, it's that kind of conversation. And you know, I happen to know the young man, and I know he's a very responsible, upright, wonderful young man. And he's going to do fine. He's going to do fine. But you know what? In my generation, I think he would have learned that lesson a lot earlier. I think he would have had that particular misconception knocked off of him a lot earlier. And the reality is that he went to private schools and he went off to college and he graduated from college, and he's never really had to make hard personal financial decisions. He's never actually had to have a hard and fast personal budget. He's never actually had to work all these things out. Even when teenagers have jobs these days, they are generally for spending money. They're generally for entertainment budget. They're not generally for the kinds of things that make for sustenance. And I'm not suggesting that we want to will ourselves into poverty. I'm not suggesting that we want our children to learn in the school of hard knocks when quite frankly, it would be artificial for a lot of our children to learn that way. They're going to have to learn sometime. And I think it means there has to be a whole lot more intentionality on the part of parents. And some of that intentionality is going to come, no doubt, with a cost. And that cost is just going to be in time and investment and learning. And the reality is that I thought one of the truest statements in this article, and I'm going to read it to you. It says here, particularly for children of upper middle class and affluent families, there's no perspective on value. When the new Range Rover pulls into the driveway, there's no concept of how many hours of hard work went into owning that vehicle. You know, that's one of those very convicting things that said from a very unexpected source. And I don't drive a Range Rover, and most of you, I'm sure, don't drive Range Rovers, but you know exactly what he's talking about here, because it doesn't have to be a Range Rover. It can be a Toyota. It can be a Chevrolet. It can be a Chrysler. It just means our kids, when they see the new car drive up in the driveway, or frankly, just the family car fueled up with gas, they don't know what it takes to get there. They don't know what's all involved. My first car cost $300 and was worth every bit of it. And I learned more of that car. I paid more in insurance than the car was worth. So I thought the original cost of my car was the cost of my wheels. Little did I find out, you know, even 35 years ago, wow, there are a whole lot of costs attendant with this. And by the way, being smart with it meant that my costs were lower than being stupid with it. And that's another lesson that you kind of have to learn the hard way. You got to keep the oil in it. You know, folks, this is a challenge for all of us. And yet it's one of those challenges that comes within a larger context of blessing. We're very blessed people. Even in the midst of this economic recession, we are a very blessed people. And most of us have had plenty. And certainly as a generation, as a culture, as a society, as a nation, we are marked by abundance. So as we look at this, we need to recognize there are some real challenges before us. And Christian parents need to understand as well that this is about soul making, not just about launching into adulthood. Because this is tied to bigger issues like getting married and having children and doing all these things to the glory of God. Back in just a moment, you're listening to the Albert Miller Program. You know, a lot of things tell us about ourselves, and sometimes our fears end up telling us a lot about ourselves, and not only as individuals, but as a society. There are some serious scientific works out there suggesting that Americans fear virtually all the wrong things. The kind of things that we see in the movies, the kind of things we hear about in the news, they're the kind of things we fear. And when parents are asked, what do you fear about their children? They list such things as being abducted by strangers or being attacked in a terrorist attack or dying a horrible death by an allergic reaction to peanuts. Okay? Now get this. It turns out that statistically speaking, those are pretty remote things. For instance, in 1999, only 115 children were abducted. Now, that's a huge number. It's a tragic number, 115. But you take all the millions of children are there. But what you really need to put that over against is the fact that 288 children died of drowning in swimming pools. So it turns out that there was a far greater danger to children dying by drowning in a swimming pool rather than being abducted by strangers. When it comes to murder, there were 14,180 murders, but when it comes to suicide, twice as many. And a lot of people just don't think about that. Shark attacks. In the year 2009, there were 28 shark attacks, not all of them fatal. That same year, 4.5 million dog bites. That's in million. 4.5 million. And when it comes to deaths by allergic reaction to peanuts, approximately 50 to 100 deaths, every one of them a tragedy. But deaths in the United States in a single year by unintentional poisoning, 27,531. That's right. Compare those numbers between 50 and 100 on the one side and 27,531. Women fear breast cancer, and they should. In the year 2009, 40,170 women died of breast cancer. But in that same year or same time period, 432,000, more than 10 times as many, died of cardiovascular disease. Women. Very, very interesting. You worry about dying in a plane crash? In 2005, counting both commercial and private aviation, 321 deaths. In car crashes, 34,017. You know, folks, there are some very real things to fear out there. There's some very dangerous things out there. This is a Genesis 3 world and a dangerous world. But it's one symptom of our failure to think clearly when, at least statistically speaking, we find out we're probably fearing the wrong things. Don't worry as much about the peanuts as the cleaning solvents that the child might get a hold of. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'll meet you then. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.